Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to triumph over the challenges in your life? Are you ready to create the life you desire? Radio host Sue London overcame illness, abuse, disease, divorce, and near death. As a spiritual life coach, Reiki master, motivational speaker, and author, Sue's goal is to help millions of people cope, heal, and move forward. Get inspired. Create the life you desire with internationally known radio host Sue London. Host Sue London and her weekly guest will bring you tools, techniques, products, and services that will help you get inspired to create the life you desire. Now, here's your host, Sue London.
I'm Sue London, and you are listening to Get Inspired Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. I want to invite you to stay with us for the next hour and let us inspire you and help you to create the life that you desire. Now, you can connect with me after the show through my personal website. That is AskSueLondon.com. And when you go to the website, folks, I want to encourage you to sign up for the free newsletter, because when you sign up for that free newsletter, I'm going to send you 10 empowering videos that are filled with tools and techniques to help you create the life you desire. And just so you know, I have personally used those same techniques to overcome and heal Crohn's disease, abuse, a life and death pregnancy, when I was given 30 minutes to live in my life, having the near-death experience, and going through a challenging divorce, and then going on to soaring above it all and creating that wonderful life that I have now. So go to AskSueLondon.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we're going to send you so many great things in there. So I look forward to inspiring you even more. Now, folks, we've got a really great show today. I thought with the upcoming of the holidays that we look at a subject, because I know there have been a few of you who have emailed me asking for this very topic, on how you can change your drinking habits, how you can perhaps stop drinking alcohol altogether. We have a great guest with us today. His name is Kenneth Anderson. And he's got a wonderful book. We're going to talk about it today. It's called How to Change Your Drinking, A Harm Reduction Guide to Alcohol. Now, Kenneth is going to share tips with you. He's going to share all kinds of great goodies. And he's going to help you to stop drinking. He's going to help you to maybe lower the amount that you drink, maybe reduce your drinking, and become a safer drinker. So without any further delay, let's bring Kenneth onto the show and let's get started with inspiring you and giving you lots of goodies here. So Kenneth, welcome to Get Inspired Radio, my friend.
Thank you for having me on the show, Sue.
Well, you know, I'm really excited because I got to be honest, I've shared this on the show many times. I am not a drinker. I drink water, and if it's going to be something strong for me, it might be a cranberry juice, or if I'm going all the way, it's a root beer. And I say that because there was a time in my life, as I said earlier, I had Crohn's disease, and on my wedding night, I had one sip of champagne, and I ended up at a walk-in clinic. I got so sick. That's how, just because my body can't handle it and I'm missing part of my intestine, it doesn't absorb it, all kinds of challenges. So I just don't drink. But I know there are people out there that it is a serious, do you call it, which is it fair to say it's a serious disease?
We don't subscribe to the disease theory. We don't find it really to be helpful. I mean, if you like the disease theory, we're not going to argue with you if you join our group, and you know, that's not our purpose, is to convince you. But generally we find people, because this is a voluntary behavior, This uses your voluntary muscles. As a friend of mine was saying the other day, I never saw a bottle of vodka roll off the shelf in the store, come knocking on my door, and pour itself down its throat against my will.
Yeah.
Now, you have to, you know, you have to actually earn the money, go to the store, buy the product, take the product home, open it up, you know, pour a glass. Yeah. Put it down your throat. These are all voluntary behaviors. These are things that are under people's control.
Yes, absolutely.
So because of that, you know, some people find, you know, when you tell them they have a disease, mm-hmm. that it's like, I'm not responsible for my behavior. I can't help it. I have this disease and I can't stop myself. And we find it much more useful to tell people, no, this is a voluntary behavior.
Okay.
This is something that you are in control of.
Okay.
You might find it difficult to control now, but it's much like exercise. You know, when you start lifting weights, you maybe can't start lifting that 200-pound barbell right away. Mm-hmm. Maybe you got to start with the 20-pound barbell or the 50-pound. But, you know, you exercise your muscles, you get stronger, and you get better. You can lift more weights. You know, you exercise your control over your drinking habits, even when they've been out of control. You get stronger. You get better at either abstaining from alcohol, if that's your goal, or if mm-hmm. you want to cut back, you know, you get better at cutting back and keeping within your moderate limits.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everyone, we believe, can always think about safety, you know, regardless, even if you can't change your consumption amounts at this point, if you can't quit right now, but you can make plans to say, oh, I'm never going to drink and drive again, because that's really, I think that's a really bad idea. I've done that in the past.
Yeah.
I think it was really a stupid idea. I don't ever want to do that again. I will plan ahead always so that I will be able to take public transportation, or I'll have a designated driver or something. So we think everyone can always practice harm reduction. And, you know, and then when you get ready, when you're still alive, then you can start to make the changes to reduce your drinking or to stop drinking, depending on what you think is going to work best for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing, you know, is always stay safe. Don't kill yourself. Don't kill anybody else. Safety goes first. Harm reduction is first. And this is something that I've learned from, you know, harm reduction programs for drug users, like needle exchange programs.
Okay.
You know, don't share those used needles. Go to the exchange, get clean needles. You know, this is, you know, my program was not invented out of thin air. I spent about a year volunteering in needle exchange in Minneapolis to learn what was working with drug users and how to apply that same thing to alcohol.
Now, can I ask you, before we go any further, how did you tell everybody exactly what you do and how you got into this line of work?
Well, I am the founder and the CEO of HAMS Harm Reduction. We're still a very small nonprofit, so it's not a full-time paying job. Actually, I don't mind telling people I get paid $300 a month for that's my salary for HAMS as the executive director right now. Because we're spending, you know, the bulk of the money that comes in is spent on developing the agency. So my daytime job now, I am director of development at the Lower East Side Harm Reduction Center. That's in Lower Manhattan.
Okay.
And that is a needle exchange program. We also offer mental health services to active drug users, substance use services to active drug users, because we realize, you know, active drug users can also, they can make progress with therapy. There's a myth out there that, you know, you have to stop using drugs completely first before you can do any psychotherapy. But the research actually shows that is wrong. And, you know, if you work with people while they're still actively using drugs, their mental health gets better. Their substance use gets better. They start using less. They get more in control of their substance use. And maybe they reach a point where they can quit. I mean, my colleagues, Andrew Tatarsky and Pat Denning, have pioneered this approach a lot. Andrew's in New York City with us. He's a good friend of not just HAMS, also Lower East Side. Pat Denning's in California. She's also a good friend of both these programs. And we know that, you know, when you work with people and give them an opportunity to get better, they will make positive changes.
Now, can I ask you something? Because I have had the experience of knowing people who are recovering alcoholic. I apologize if I'm not saying these terms right. Correct me, okay? And they have said the first step that they had to admit was that they had a problem. Is this how your system works as well?
Well, you know, that's interesting that they say admit that they had a problem.
Mm-hmm. Or that they were an alcoholic, for example, you know?
You know, if you look at the 12 steps of AA, which is the standard approach, the first step actually says we admitted that we were powerless.
Okay.
Say, admitting you are powerless and saying that you have a problem.
Those are two different ways to look at it in a different
Very different ways to look at it. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there that do well with 12-step programs, and I have no argument with anybody that's succeeding. In fact, a lot of my colleagues I work side by side with in Needle Exchange, they are members of Narcotics Anonymous too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I don't have any problem with them. But, you know, my friends, my colleagues in Needle Exchange, they realize not everybody is going to change via a 12-step program, and not everybody is going to jump into abstinence. And you got to keep people alive, because if people are dead, they're not going to recover. That is the first step, is to keep people safe, keep them HIV-free, you know, don't let them die of an overdose. Mm-hmm. We also do overdose prevention at Lower East Side, and we give people Narcan kits to reverse overdoses, teach them what the dangers of overdose are and how to avoid them. So it's very important. And, you know, for many people who are members of 12-step groups, they also they find harm reduction to be compatible with their personal beliefs.
Okay.
So, I mean, I know the organizations have no official standpoint on harm reduction.
Yeah. But
For me, at least, the idea that I am powerless over alcohol, for me, that is not a good approach. In fact, I tried going to AA. I tried going to the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. And hearing this thing, you know, I was abstaining from alcohol when I started attending the meetings.
Okay.
By the time I finished and left, I was drinking. I drank 5 liters of whiskey in 5 days. And that was because they kept telling me that alcohol was powerful and I was powerless. And I could only be rescued by a higher power. For my subconscious, at least, that was a terrible message.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of other people that tried AA, they wound up the same thing. They're drinking. Didn't stop. It went up and up. Some people just do not react well to that notion of that they are powerless. And that is not where we approach this from.
Okay.
We approach it from the idea you have the power within yourself to make changes. Mm-hmm. But there are various things that you can use to help you. Can you use knowledge, information, techniques, evidence-based methods. So first we give you information about things you can do that are helpful, and then we also encourage you to exercise your power. So as I said before, the more you exercise your power, the stronger you get. The more times you can say no to that glass of vodka, the more successful you can get at refusing it. Your choice muscles and your abstinence muscles keep getting stronger every time you exercise them.
Now, do you feel that somebody in this position, that they should, it's a good thing to have a buddy, an accountability buddy doing this?
Well, quite a few of our members, they do join up, they buddy up with each other and support each other that way. It's not required. So it's different from the AA sponsorship, which kind of says everyone needs a sponsor, and that's very much of a power relationship. The sponsor is an old timer with lots of experience, and the other person is a newcomer, and we don't really do it that way.
Okay.
People that do want to work together, that's fine. If they say, okay, I want to abstain for 30 days, and somebody else in our email group, for example, says, I want to abstain for 30 days too. You want to do this together and support each other? And yeah, they'll get together, and it will be much more of an equal level relationship. So.
I know this is kind of on the same idea, but different situation. I know my husband and I, we are very competitive, and I was never competitive till I met Ross. And we get it in our mind, we're going to lose weight. So we're going to exercise, and we kind of compete, like, okay, how much did you do? Well, I got to do that too. So that's why I'm saying, like, I know for me, having someone to be accountable to or be working with, it's much more of a benefit for me personally. So I guess it's kind of, you have to look at the person and where they're at and what they're all about then for this, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people generally choose the right thing for themselves. If it's something you feel uncomfortable with, then it's probably not going to be helpful if you force yourself into something that feels really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they get their accountability by posting to the email group. They say, okay, I'm not going to drink anything for the next week. And that's my goal for this next week. And then, you know, lots of times they make it for the week. They achieve their goal and everybody's just great. That's wonderful. Sometimes it's, you know, I'm not going to drink for a week and you make one day. Mm-hmm. Well, and the first thing, you know, that people want to say is, I'm a failure. I'm no good. I'm worthless. And we got to remind them, no, you did one day. One day is much better than 0 days. So just because you didn't make 2 days consecutive, you can start right again on your week. But don't beat yourself up. Don't get lost in making yourself feel miserable, because the more you feel miserable, the more you're going to want to drink, actually.
The more you're going to want to do it more, yeah. Now, do you find that the work that you do, people sometimes not realize they should maybe make these changes in drinking less, that maybe they are harmful to themselves or others, and that you may have families, you know, coming in and being in having interventions happening?
We haven't got really into the friends and family part of this yet, but I do want to address that a little bit. We do have a chapter in our book about helping your spouse to change their drinking, and our material is really, it's very largely derived from the work of Robert Myers, PhD. He's professor emeritus at University of New Mexico. He's written a book with Brenda Wolf. It's called Get Your Loved One Sober, Alternatives to Nagging, Pleading, and something like that. But it's Get Your Loved One Sober is the main title. It's a great book. Bob did a huge amount of research on what is effective in helping people to change, in helping to convince people to change. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very evidence-based book.
Okay.
And you know, I highly recommend it. And what do I want? What did I want to say? I don't want to lose the track.
I was going to say, you know, like, let's look at, like, I want to break it down. Like, say a family member's listening and they think, okay, I have a family member that is harming themselves or whatever. So what could they do? Let's give those people steps first. What could they do to get help for their loved one? Or what steps should they say? You know, what action should they take?
Mm-hmm. As I was saying, first thing I would say is buy Bob's book, Get Your Loved One Sober. And it's available from Amazon. It's a very reasonable price. I don't remember offhand what it is, but it's not an expensive book. It's just a regular price book. It's very good. The one thing I wanted to say that I was forgetting is when Bob Myers says sober, he's not insisting on total abstinence as the only necessary goal. He also accepts moderation as an acceptable goal. And, you know, we would like to work this with him a little bit more to talk more about harm reduction and safety. Mm-hmm. But he also addresses that. So some of the things in the CRAFT program, CRAFT is an acronym, stands for Community Reinforcement and Family Training. So that's Bob's approach, is CRAFT.
Okay.
And CRAFT realizes that the more you push somebody, the more that they will push back. So the more that you nag and the more you say, you need to stop drinking right now. And the person says, oh, no, I don't. You need to stop bothering me. You're driving me to drink. And, you know, you get this. Instead of doing this, a CRAFT approach might be to ask someone, what do you like about drinking alcohol?
Okay.
And the first thing that happens, of course, is they're flabbergasted because they weren't expecting you to say that. They were expecting to be attacked. And it's like, well, is this a trick? No, it's not a trick. Just tell me, what do you like about drinking alcohol? Mm-hmm. And people can start listing some things. They start to feel comfortable. And then you can say, is there anything you don't like about drinking alcohol? And maybe they'll say, well, I got that DUI last month and it's going to cost me a fortune and I never want to do that again. That was terrible. Mm-hmm. And then you can start saying, well, there's some good things about alcohol. There's some bad things. Is there anything you want to change about your drinking? And, you know, people say, well, yeah, there are some things I want to change about my drinking. This is this type of approach, which comes from CRAFT, is also known as motivational interviewing. Okay. And it's the exact opposite of confrontational counseling.
And I can tell you, as any parent listening, if you have children or teenage children and you say, go make your bed, they're not going to make their bed. So, you know, anybody you talk to, if you force something on them, they're going to fight back no matter what the kind of situation it is. So I like this idea that you're saying, you know, with the craft system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So back in the 60s or maybe up into the 80s, you know, confrontational counseling was kind of the standard at addiction treatment programs. Mm-hmm. But some people did research on it, like William Miller, who's also from University of New Mexico, and William White, who is one of the great scholars of addiction treatment history. He's in Illinois at Chestnut Systems. Mm-hmm. And they did some research on confrontational counseling, and it's actually worse than doing nothing at all. You know, So it's time to get past and, you know, get past the whole confrontational idea, because, you know, they often say people with addictions are in denial, but that's not really so much true as the fact that confronting people brings out denial automatically.
Okay.
It's more that the problem was in the treatment system, the approach, which immediately attacked people and said, you know, you're an addict. You must admit you're an addict. Oh, no, I'm not. Immediately people fight back.
Myself, I have never been in this situation with being with somebody who drinks heavily, or, you know, I wouldn't know. I'm not familiar with that situation. So maybe we have some family members listening, and maybe that they have a loved one that is drinking excessively. I know myself, when I had a husband who was having an affair and I didn't know, I was kind of in denial. Do you see that some family members may say my loved one does not have anything, it's not wrong what they're doing? Do you find they're in denial? Do you know where I'm going with this? I'm not even sure what the question is. I guess maybe to point out for those listening that what you need to look at, like what is it like to be living with somebody with excessive drinking? Maybe that's the question I should be asking you.
You know, from our point of view, we really say that people have to decide for themselves.
Okay.
So, and if it is a husband and a wife, and one of them is a heavy drinker, and they're both happy with it, and they don't engage in high-risk behaviors, you know, like drinking and driving, then, you know, the fact that, say, the husband likes to get smashed on Friday night, who am I to judge that's a bad thing?
Okay.
You know, so we are not very judgmental. In fact, although my specialty is alcohol, I mean, I think it's just terrible that people are put in jail for enjoying doing drugs when they're not hurting anyone. Okay. I think we need a huge change in the drug laws, complete decriminalization at least. Stop incarcerating people for doing something that hurts no one. Okay. And, you know, that's a whole nother issue, though. But seriously, you know, if you choose, I mean, as I told you, by the time I left AA, I was drinking a liter of whiskey a day. I drank that 5 days in a row, and I was ready to die, actually, of alcohol withdrawal if I didn't get a professional medical detox. So I did check in to get the professional medical detox because, you know, I had all those symptoms, unsteady heart rate, rapid pulse, high blood pressure, you know, ready to die of heart attack or stroke. So I switched from that. That was probably the worst I was ever at. And I went to getting intoxicated one day a week.
Okay.
Now, some people would be judgmental and say, well, you're never supposed to drink again, or ever being intoxicated is bad. You have to be a moderate drinker if you're going to drink at all. Okay. I say, oh, wait, I drink at home safely one night a week. It's not on a work night. Yeah. I watch some movies and then I go to sleep when I'm done. And, you know, it's something I enjoy doing. It takes up a little time, but it's not something that's excessively involved in. So I don't find that it is anything morally wrong with it.
Okay. I think it's more like the harm that they could do to themselves or others. you know, like the drinking and driving. I know we have brought guests on the show many times over the years and shared their stories of being hit by drunk drivers, lost their legs, loved ones killed, that kind of thing. So I, you know, that's, I guess, what we have to look at is the people that maybe are doing that, you know, that how, what steps could they take? Or, you know, that's where, what do their loved ones do? And so we're talking about their loved ones kind of using the CRAFT program, getting that book. Again, tell everybody the name of that book.
Get Your Loved One Sober.
Okay. Okay.
That's by Robert Myers. And I'm not getting any money by endorsing his book.
Yeah, just, well, you know,
it's good.
And, you know, I like to give tools to all our listeners because, you know, you could be the person with, you know, wanting to change your drinking habits and what can you do? And you might be someone who has such a strong love and wanting to help somebody, you know, with this going on. So I like to kind of cover both areas. Now, let me ask you, I'm a life coach and I always look at, you know, what's the emotional thing going on in the person? Do you see, is there a common trait of why people drink?
There are a multitude of reasons.
Okay.
And a lot of people who drink excessively and, you know, in their own judgment, their drinking is excessive. Very often there are co-occurring issues, depression or anxiety or social phobia are all very common. PTSD is also very common. And these can very much drive the alcohol use and make it difficult to change and reduce the amounts if these issues are not addressed.
Okay.
So we definitely encourage our people to work with a good therapist that's understanding, that understands the harm reduction approach, and that will work with them on these issues because, you know, we don't consider ourselves a competent. Our agency's expertise is not in curing psychological illnesses or we give people some self-help approaches. There's some cognitive behavioral techniques that you can do by yourself.
Okay.
And we've got some of those in our book. And we also recommend David Byrne's book, Feeling Good, which is a really good cognitive behavioral self-help manual. It's much more extensive than our book because, you know, it can go beyond. Our book is primarily about changing your drinking. This is a great book with a lot of cognitive behavioral exercises you can do. And they actually did clinical testing on David Byrne's book. He's from Stanford. And they found that a large number of people, I think about a third of the people, were capable of using the book alone to resolve their issues with depression or anxiety or similar things. And then about another third, you know, maybe needed to work with a therapist and the book. And the book is very compatible to work with a therapist with.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe some people, they need that third step of getting some medications. Mm-hmm. We usually say, you know, you kind of triage. So medication is kind of your last resort. We say we don't really think that antidepressants are the first thing you should run to, but only when all else fails.
Okay. Can I just stop you for a sec? What I want to do is take a quick break. When we come back, let's go in more detail of some techniques and things that people can do. Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so folks, we're going to take that quick break. When we come back, Kenneth will share some more tips on how to reduce, change, or stop your drinking alcohol. To learn more about me, Sue London, go to AskSueLondon.com. And to learn more about Kenneth Anderson, please visit HAMS, HAMS Network.org. And his book is How to Change Your Drinking, A Harm Reduction Guide to Alcohol. So check all that out and stay tuned, and we'll be back after this short break.
Get inspired. Create the life you desire with internationally known radio host and motivational speaker Sue London. Sue inspires millions of people to overcome difficult or traumatic situations in their lives. People feel hope, courage, and are ready to move forward after hearing Sue speak. Book motivational speaker Sue London for your next event at AskSueLondon.com. That's AskSueLondon.com.
If you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, if you want a book that will change your life, then you won't want to miss getting Sandy Brewer's compelling memoir, Pursuit of a Light. Get it now in our holiday gift sale for only $9.97. Plus, receive Sandy's special gift to you of her amazing audio series, Six Steps to Mastering the Art of Healing. Go to sandybrewer.com, click the book tab to place your order, and at checkout, use the coupon code HOLIDAY. Get the sale package valued at over $40 for only $9.97 today at sandybrewer.com.
Get your shift together with Dr. Joe Dispenza and Greg Braden Saturday, November 16th, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Seattle Center for Spiritual Living for this collaboration between two of the most inspiring teachers, highlighting their unique paths as they explore the latest scientific studies and how this information can empower you during this critical period of our history. Making a difference in the world starts with you. To register, go to joedispenza.com/events. That's joedispenza.com/events. Do you ever wonder why you feel off balance and out of focus most of your life? Would you like to have an aha moment every day? The Michelle Bond Show, Awaken to a New Reality, will empower you to feel wonderment every moment of every day. This hit show provides healthy, empowering knowledge and information which gives hope to everyone from the healthy to the health challenged. Get ready to restore and maintain your wholeness, mind, body, and spirit through learning the latest complementary and alternative healing modalities. Your new reality will introduce you to an unlimited world of possibilities with the gumption to take epic action for your life. This call-in show with wholeness coach Michelle Bond will give you insight to a wide range of topics, from nutrition to lifestyle choices to manifesting your wildest dreams. Tune in Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time.
The Tick-Borne Disease Alliance, TBDA, has just launched Bite Back for a Cure, a new national grassroots campaign to build support for the fight against tick-borne diseases. This fall, 24-year-old John Donnelly is biking across America to meet others affected by tick-borne diseases and raise awareness about the national tick-borne disease epidemic. TBDA wants you to get involved in the campaign and follow John's journey. To learn more, visit bitebackforacure.org.
We're back on Get Inspired Radio with Sue London. Folks, I've got Kenneth Anderson with us today. And today you're learning about safer drinking, reduced drinking, or quitting your alcohol consumption altogether. Christopher, I know you had some questions that you wanted to ask Kenneth. Do you want to ask some questions now?
Sure. Yeah, I can ask some questions. Of course, alcohol and the holidays, unfortunately, see, because we're going into the holiday season now, and it's bad year-round, but it is a disease, and a lot of people don't really understand that it is indeed a disease and not just something that people, you know, do for recreation, and it can get, pretty bad, especially when you have large groups of family around. And I think one of the biggest issues is denial. You approach an alcoholic, and the first thing they say is, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't do this all the time. I can stop anytime I want to. It sounds cliche, but how would you respond to that?
Well, it's interesting. We just addressed both of those issues earlier. We don't subscribe to the disease concept in particular, because drinking alcohol is a voluntary behavior. And when people start thinking that they are diseased, they start saying, well, I can't help it. And also, all too often, it just leads them to drink more and to say, you know, this is something I can't control. It's a disease. And we say, no, it's a voluntary behavior. The way to change your drinking is to exercise your muscles, your change muscles, and to get them stronger, because it is something that you are in control of. There is not some higher power out there that rescues you or cures your diseases. I don't believe in faith healing, so that's never an approach that we take. Also, denial is very much a product, as we said earlier, of confrontational counseling. When you confront people, you get denial. It doesn't matter what you confront them about. It doesn't matter if it's about drinking, about their television watching, about how you don't like how they look. And no matter what you confront people about, you automatically provoke denial. And the way to not promote denial, but to provoke change instead, is actually to use an approach called motivational interviewing, which we discussed quite a bit earlier.
Well, I just learned something new, and I appreciate you clarifying to me that it's not a disease, because I think in this country anyway, we are taught that it is a disease, and you're actually the first person I've ever heard say that, so I actually learned something.
Yeah, and I was the same way, Chris, because I thought, like, I've always been raised and told it was a disease, so we're both learning something here for sure.
Well, it's definitely an issue of contention. So are there probably more people that say it is a disease than will say that it's not? However, I think that the ways that actually help people to change are to help them take responsibility for their actions and to empower them to make changes. And telling people their disease doesn't help to empower them. Telling people that you have the strengths within you and we can give you tools to make changes. And the more you exercise your change muscles, the stronger you get and the better you will be at making your changes. These seem to be the ways that have the great success.
Yeah, that's good. Why don't we talk now about like some of these tools. So let's talk, okay, there's a person listening that we want to help them to be a safer drinker, reduce their drinking, or quit drinking altogether. So what are some tools? Where do you want to start with helping those type of people?
Well, the basic outline of the HAMS program is our 17 elements. And okay. We call them elements and not steps because they can be done in any order. You can choose to do one and not do any of the others. None of them are compulsory. Excuse me. You will have to do at least one to make some changes. But, you know, you can start wherever you like, and you don't have to do them in any particular order. If you can't figure out where to start, then start at number one. And number one is to do a cost-benefit analysis of your drinking.
Okay.
And this is a written exercise. We encourage people to do a lot of written exercises because when you write things down, you make them real in your mind.
Yes.
Saying them out loud also helps to make them real. You know, if you're working with somebody that's illiterate and doesn't read and write, having them speak them can be the way to get them real. But, you know, just doing them in your head and keeping them in your head, they just disappear. Actually writing them out makes them very real, and then you remember them and you act on them. So the cost-benefit analysis, actually, you work with four sheets of paper. On the first, you write down the pros of your current drinking habit. There must be something good about it, or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing right now. On the second paper, you write down the cons. What are the negatives of your current drinking habit? Then on the third paper, write down the pros of the change you want to make. And the fourth sheet, write down the cons of the change you want to make. And, you know, the traditional treatment approach would be to tell people, make a list of everything that's terrible about alcohol and make a list about everything that's good about what your recovery will be. And, you know, that backfires all the time because all the good things about drinking stay in your subconscious. And people relapse, and just doing that doesn't work. You have to be aware. You have to be conscious of both sides and be conscious you did drink because there were some good things about it. Mm-hmm. And when you make your change, if you decide to stop drinking, there will be negative things about not drinking. There will be, and if you're aware and prepared and walk into the situation with awareness, then you will be much better armed to resist, whereas if you never thought about it and you're totally unprepared, and then it just blindsides you.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest issues I see, though, and now that I know it's not a disease, this is helpful, is binge drinking, where there are certain people who I know personally that will actually, they'll go 3 or 4 days without drinking anything, but then when they have the opportunity to drink and they know ahead of time that they're going to drink, they'll just go crazy and do as much as they possibly can till they can barely stand up anymore. And maybe that sounds a little drastic, but it's true that I guess you'd call that a binge drinking thing. Is there a way to get that person to do it in moderation or even not at all?
Well, first of all, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but we don't necessarily condemn a person for wanting to alter their consciousness or to get intoxicated. Now, the first thing we have to say is the person being concerned about safety? I mean, did they drive to their party, get totally wasted, and then plan to drive home? That is something that we would say right away. You want to work on reducing your risks. You want to first, you know, you want really to think about ways to be safe. because, you know, if you choose to get intoxicated now and then, once a week or even a couple times a week, that's not necessarily an evil, immoral thing. If you're not hurting anybody, if you don't drink on a work night, so you don't go into work all hungover, if you don't cause yourself problems with it, choosing to alter your consciousness is not evil or wrong or immoral in and of itself. It is really if there are risks involved with what you're doing and how can you minimize those risks.
Now, can I ask you, do you know, is there any documented proof of when a person does like this binge drinking, like what Christopher was saying, what does it do to their health? Do you know?
Yes. Clearly, if you want to maximize your health and reduce all the risks in the world, the best thing that you can do is live in a padded cell, eat only gruel, nothing good, and never leave the house. It'll just be locked in a padded cell for your whole life, and then you will minimize all your risks. You won't get hit by a car crossing the street. You know, you won't harden your arteries, get all this cholesterol from eating these nice, tasty pork chops. You can just have this oatmeal instead. And I would think that would be about the most miserable existence anybody could imagine, but you'd probably maximize your the length of your life.
Okay.
You always have to think. One has to think about trade-offs. You know, do you want do you want to enjoy your life, or do you want to be safe and maximize the length of your life, or what's the reasonable trade-off? Do you like to eat pork chops? Maybe you like to eat pork chops sometime, and maybe that's not the healthiest thing to eat. But if that's something you like, you know, you've got to measure your risks against it's the costs versus the benefits, and this is how we look at everything in life. Now, getting drunk now and then is not. Is not the best thing for your health. Uh-huh. Although, interestingly, and this study was in Time magazine, and you all can look it up on the internet, they found that abstainers died sooner than heavy drinkers.
Really?
Yeah. And you got to remember, heavy drinking in the U.S. has some very conservative definitions. So 5 beers in one day is considered heavy drinking in the U.S. Mm-hmm. or 15 beers in 1 week is considered heavy drinking. So, you know, so if they were more reasonable, you know, and looked at it on a continuum, well, the guys that drink a quart of vodka every day aren't going to live longer. We know they die a lot sooner. Mm-hmm. But actually, since we have such a broad definition of heavy drinking in the U.S., they actually found that lifelong abstainers were more likely to die sooner than the people that fell in the heavy drinking category. And, of course, the moderate drinkers lived the longest.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. Kenneth, we have to take another break now. So when we come back, we're going to talk about Kenneth's book, How to Change Your Drinking. Folks, there's, you know, Kenneth has given you so little tools here about making your list and that, but this book has got so much great information in it. And if you are in this place where you want to learn more about safer drinking, reduce your drinking, or quit alcohol altogether, I would really recommend this book for you. So to learn about the book, if you go to his website, Kenneth, tell everybody again,
hamsnetwork.org.
Okay, so folks, let's take this quick break and we'll be back after this short break. Stay tuned.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Laura Longley is on a mission to remove stuckness from your life for good and replace it with happiness. Tune in Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com for The Laura Longley Show, where authentic change takes flight. Say yes to that inspired you and goodbye to your stuckness as Laura and her guests deliver powerful ways to work through common problems in this fun and unique hit show.
Get inspired. Create the life you desire with internationally known radio host and motivational speaker Sue London. Sue inspires millions of people to overcome difficult or traumatic situations in their lives. People feel hope, courage, and are ready to move forward after hearing Sue speak. Book motivational speaker Sue London for your next event at AskSueLondon.com. That's AskSueLondon.com.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
We are back on Get Inspired Radio with Sue London. Folks, today we have Kenneth Anderson with us, and we've been talking about how to change your drinking habits. Now, Kenneth, you wanted to give our listeners one more tool here before we're almost out of time about charting. Do you want to tell everybody what that's about?
Yes. This is element 11 of our 11 elements, and it is to use a chart to plan and track your drinks and drinking behaviors day by day. This has had a huge amount of research behind it, going back to Mark and Linda Sobel in the 70s, and it might sound very familiar to you if you've ever been on a diet and had a food diary. It's the exact same thing. With a food diary, you write down your calories, what you eat. With a drinking diary or a drinking chart, as we sometimes call it, you get a calendar or a diary or another. We have a worksheet that you can print out from the website for free. Okay. And you chart your drinks. How many drinks did you have this day? If you had none, you just write down zero. And we teach people how to measure a standard drink according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture standards for the standard drink, which is a 12-ounce beer, a 5-ounce glass of wine at 12%, 1.5-ounce shot of 80-proof booze. Those are each a standard drink. You record them, and, you know, you got to realize if you go to a bar and order a drink, you know, sometimes it has 5 drinks in it, sometimes it has 6 standard drinks in it. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on what you order, those Long Island iced teas, I'm told, have like 6 standard drinks in them. So a bar drink is not one drink.
Okay.
So you have to actually sometimes estimate if you're at a bar or if you're at home, get out your measuring cup, get out your shot glass, actually measure what you drink. Beer is easy because it comes in 12-ounce cans. So one can, one drink.
See how much I know, Kenneth?
One of the amazing things that they find with charting and that they found early on that was actually a bit problematic for the researchers, but they found when people started charting, they automatically started reducing the amount that they were drinking, or if it's a food diary, the amount you're eating, even when they're not trying to reduce yet. Because, you know, the researchers wanted to get a baseline, and they said, wait a minute, everybody's reducing their amounts, so it's messing with us getting a baseline. But
it's true, though. Like, you know, I've done a lot of coaching on it, like myself personally, and I do coaching. And what you focus on, you can change. So charting makes total sense to me. And I know I do that myself, like for different things. So that's really a great tool to give everybody. I like this one. Yeah.
It is. And the researchers said, oh, well, we accidentally found something that will make people reduce their drinking even without making an effort, just by writing it down every day. They will automatically reduce. And if you make the effort to reduce on top of writing it down, you get even better reductions. So this is a really excellent tool that an awful lot of our members use. Okay. Not everybody is forced to keep a chart every day because it depends on. Some people like me will drink once a week on Friday, the same amount every week, you know. And it gets really boring after a while because six days of zeros and one day of 17 and then 6 days of zeros and, you know, same thing.
Yeah.
But most people have more variation in their drinking habits and they find that charting is just extremely useful. So it's something they use a great deal.
Great. Now let's talk about your website because you've got a lot of great tools there, a lot of great information. Tell everybody, the website, folks, is hamsnetwork.org. That's where they can purchase your book, right?
Yes. We have links to Amazon. We sell the book straight through Amazon. So the links from the hamsnetwork.org will take you straight to Amazon to buy the book. It's also on Kindle. The Kindle edition is $8 and the paperback is $17. So it's quite reasonable because it's a big, big book. Well, you have a copy.
It is very big. And I was going to say, again, the title, folks, is How to Change Your Drinking, A Harm Reduction Guide to Alcohol. It is a very big book. And I say that in a good way, because there's a lot of fantastic information in that. So what else is on the website? You said that there was
We have all the worksheets are on the website, so you can print them all out, especially if you get the Kindle edition, because you can't print the worksheets from the Kindle. You can just go to the website and print them all out from the website. It's all, everything on the website is free. You only have to pay for the book. That's the only thing we charge for. Mm-hmm. There's an email group. It's a Yahoo group, and you can join that. We have a real-time chat at 9 p.m. Eastern time. That's 6 p.m. Pacific, and that's every night of the week. So we have people come into the email group to share what they're doing, where they're at. People come in to chat. People get the book. And these are the main sources of our program that the people use to make changes in their drinking habits.
Well, perfect. Well, Kenneth, I have to thank you for being with us today. And you've given a lot of great information. I cannot say to you enough that this book, if you want to, you know, change your habits, if you want to, you know, stop drinking completely or just reduce it, you know, do anything around your drinking habits, this book will help you. It will help you to become aware. It is a positive tool to have. And that book is, again, How to Change Your Drinking, A Harm Reduction Guide to Alcohol. And Kenneth's website is hamsnetwork.org. Kenneth, thank you so much for being with us. And I wish you all the best in everything that you're doing in your future.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Well, that was a great interview with Kenneth, Sue.
It was, wasn't it? And, you know, it really opened my eyes because, I mean, as you know, if I have a cranberry juice, that's the heaviest drink I have. Like, I'm a water drinker. So I think that the information we shared here today has been, you know, valuable for a lot of great people. And, anything that you want to add about the segment?
Well, again, I want to say that I learned on this evening's show that it was not a disease. It actually is, a whole different scenario altogether. And I also took this in that I was thinking about while you were talking to Kenneth, is that a lot of times people think they can either erase their problems or it's like a self-medicating type of thing, which is so far from the truth. Because as they say, it sounds cliche, but you pay for it later.
Yes. Yeah, it's so true. So now on to a different topic. My big day is coming up.
Oh, here we go again.
Well, we have to have the countdown, you know, my friend.
I have a countdown clock here for you, counting down to Sue's birthday.
Well, you know what? We've got our Caribbean cruise coming up very shortly. And
I know. Are you looking forward to it? You sound like you're excited.
I am looking so forward to it. I am not sleeping. I am like trying to pack suitcases and get things organized because there's so much I'm doing right now, not just like doing one show and then that's it, right? I have a grandson that is insisting he's coming and every year, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed and I'm not putting this intention out, but every year our grandson has gotten hurt before we take a trip.
Oh, dear.
And the last trip I said to him, why do you get hurt like the day before we leave? And he said, well, Grandma, I don't want you to go. So I've been having long talks with him about I'm coming back. I'll email you. And, you know, what do you want brought back? So I'm putting this intention out that, you know, he knows we're coming back. And once he gets older, you know, we'll take him on our trips. But it hasn't been our grandson. It's been the dogs. I bring the suitcases out. They go to the front door and they're throwing up.
I think that's very sweet.
Is sweet? It's not fun cleaning it up.
No. Let's first things first. I think it's very sweet about your grandson. No, yes. I don't think it's sweet about the dogs throwing up. No. I'm talking about your grandson.
Exactly. So, you know, like we are very, very connected, my grandson and I. And I do understand where he's at because we are very, very close. But when he gets older, you know, he'll be coming on trips with us for sure. But last night, Ross and I, you know, that friend of ours, Jay, the one who came from England onto the show and talked about how we did the that boat ride, you know, that I didn't think I was coming back from.
I know. And he did call in. He called in a couple of times.
Well, he called me last night and they want to do another cruise with us. So we are going back to the Caribbean, already booked for 2014. And we're going to be going to Cozumel, Mexico, and we're going to be joining them. So I am so excited. So there was no sleeping for me last night. So Ross says I got to do a little bit more extra walking because my energy is so high right now.
Just make sure that week that you're not taking a B12 shot before you go away.
I am.
You can't. You won't need one.
Well, you know, that's true. But we'll be gone for 10 days. So that's been my week about, you know, trying to get my family and my dogs prepared for us going away in another week or so. And then booking another cruise. So how's your week going? What have you been up to?
Well, very, very busy week. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to make any pretenses to our listeners, but I am actually not in the studio right now. This is pre-recorded because I'm out on the streets right now, dressed up in costume for the annual trick-or-treat that the Westerly Substance Abuse Task Force puts on. The entire street is closed right now, Sue. All of High Street is closed, and we are playing Halloween music through our speakers, although this show may still be running on the radio, though.
Well, I feel very honored, and, you know, Halloween is really an amazing time for little kids. The parents, however, suffer when all those kids get that extra sugar jolt.
That's part of it.
It's part of it, you say?
The candy. You can't get away from candy on Halloween, too, as much as you try.
Well, you know what my daughter said? They were over a couple of days ago, and she said, hey, Mom, I'm bringing the kids over, and they're going to stay for the weekend with you. And I said, hey, that's great. She goes, yeah, but do you realize that Halloween is Thursday, and they're coming over Friday? I said, oh, wait a minute. That's a whole different story. You know, see, when you're a grandparent, you can pick and choose when you're going to have them, and you can send them back if they're bad.
That's true.
That's a little tip for you, Chris.
Well, tips are easily heard, but not always followed, but yes.
Oh, wow. Well, on that note, I guess we're out of time.
We've had a fantastic show.
I look forward to hearing all about how your evening unfolds for you. And
I'll send you pictures.
Please do, and I will post them on all my social media for y'all to see. We had a great interview with Kenneth Anderson, and as Christopher, as always, I love working with you. You are such a dear friend of mine, and I love you dearly.
And I love you dearly, too.
Thank you. And on behalf of myself, Sue London, we all want to wish you much love and many blessings, and we look forward to inspiring you again real soon. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Get Inspired with Sue London. If you've missed any part of this program or would like to find out more about Sue London and how to get inspired, please visit AskSueLondon.com. That's AskSueLondon.com. Tune in to Get Inspired every Thursday on TransformationTalkRadio.com at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern to be inspired by radio host Sue London and her guest to help you create the life you desire.